Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
Now, in many notorious crimes, some inanimate objects become an important feature of the story. For instance, the white Bronco in which O.J. Simpson tried to flee the police. So where did such things end up? Many of them go to the Alcatraz East Crime Museum in Tennessee. On the line from there is Janine Vaccarello. Good afternoon, Janine.
Hello, how are you?
Not too bad. Could you describe for us, say, because O.J.'s Bronco is there, how do you go about acquiring something like that?
Well, just for the record, the Bronco is the infamous Bronco from the chase. So it truly wasn't owned by O.J., but his friend who was driving the vehicle during that low-speed highway chase in L.A. But the owners of it, one of the owners is O.J.'s former manager, and so we've just worked with him for many years on various things. And when we moved locations from D.C. to Tennessee, we had space for the Bronco at that time, so we just talked about possibly moving it into a museum, and they felt like it was a right fit for it. So,
right. But
this museum.
But would it have been a situation where you would have approached him and said, can we display this this Bronco, or he approached you?
Years ago, we discussed it, and he asked if we had room, because I just had asked what they had in possession of OJ's that we could incorporate into the museum. For a while, after the case, there was a court-ordered his suit from the hearings that was court-ordered to go into a museum. So at that point, the conversation started on what they had to incorporate into our museum. And the Bronco came up at that time, but the way our museum was designed, we simply couldn't fit it in. So then when we opened in Tennessee, we were able to build with the mindset of having cars and having a car gallery within our museum.
Right,
so
okay.
At that point, conversations began.
Yeah, because I was wondering, like, if after, say, a court case is over, you know, are there private collectors and museums such as yourselves kind of who say, right, that case is over, let's see what we can buy from it? Because I remember from the OJ trial, there was the infamous gloves as well. What, can all those things, sort of things, be bought if people want to get their hands on them?
Certainly. I mean, the way to go about it varies. I mean, a lot of times, if a case isn't solved or closed, and in that case, because of OJ was acquitted from that, the gloves were never released. So that's still part of the police possession, because the gloves were part of the hearing. So those never got released. But it varies. A lot of times items are returned to family members, and then they can decide what to do. And then it depends on what the case is, if it was, you know, controversial. A lot of times we try to work with victims' families as well, because we don't want their voice to be unheard. Sometimes they don't wish to speak to us, or they don't want their items in the museum. They just want to keep them, because it's when someone loses a loved one, it's hard for them to want to let go of any of their possessions, even if it's a way for people to never forget the victims. They just have a hard time letting go. So, yeah, we look at everything and approach it on a case-by-case basis, because there's just no way to do it, to have one answer. It just depends on the controversy of the case, the sensitivity of it, who's involved, who has the possessions, if there's any. You know, sometimes it's all tied up in the court hearings. So it just depends.
Now, the Bronco, as far as I understand it, isn't changed at all since the time of the chase. Indeed, it still has some of the original gas in the tank from that time.
Correct. I mean, we did have to drain the fluids from it in order to be in the museum. But when we took possession of it, it was pretty much exactly as is, just added a couple of miles to it. But there was even some items in the center console. But like I said, those weren't OJ items. Those were AC Collins, which was OJ's friend who was driving the Bronco. They were very close friends and had the exact same Bronco. So a lot of people are confused by it. The most famous Bronco is the one from the chase that the world was watching. The second Bronco belonged to OJ, and that was taken into police possession to look for, you know, to pull DNA, and that was completely dismantled because they did find blood in it. That was completely dismantled. So that was never returned to anyone. In fact, the police gave the option because really it was owned by Hertz Rental Company, because at that time OJ was a spokesperson for Hertz. Hmm. So they actually gave Hertz the option to return it to them, and they said no, that they didn't want it back. So it was never even reassembled. It was completely dismantled for forensic evidence and never put back together. So that just was scrapped. And so the only Bronco is the one from the chase that's in existence, and that is the one in the museum. And so, yeah, we the stuff that was in the center console that I assume was Al Collins was like a brush and comb set and just some coins. And we did put that in the museum as well on display.
How much would the Bronco be worth? Is it possible to estimate now?
I always say with these things, it's worth as much as people are willing to pay for it. So it's hard to say. I mean, the value that I'm sure the owners have on it is about $1 million.
Crikey. Well, that is a lot of money.
I mean, I think it depends on if anyone is willing to pay $1 million, then it's not worth it. But at this time, you know, they did express that, you know, they like the fact that it's in the museum and being preserved and people can learn about the case, because so much, you know, it's a tragedy what happened through the whole thing, but a lot of good came from it because of the awareness. LAPD improved, the way that evidence collection was handled was improved. Also, there was, you know, a lot of talks of, you know, of racism amongst police departments and how that could be improved. So that was the beginning of the discussions of looking into that. And it, you know, that so much came out of that one case. Also, that was the first case that forensic evidence was discussed in court where public was hearing about it. So at that point, nobody even really knew about forensics. Mm. And so that kind of launched this interest in the forensic evidence. And then after that, we started seeing shows coming out and people, you know, interested in becoming a forensic scientist. So it just is interesting what that one case brought about on the flip side. I mean, not taking away from the tragedy at all, because obviously we would wish nothing ever happened.
Of course, yeah. Another car you have there is Ted Bundy, the infamous serial killer. You have his Beetle. Did he use that car and around any of his crimes?
Yes, he did. That car was used, and that car also was used as evidence. But, you know, back then there wasn't nearly the same level of DNA, wasn't the same as it is now, you know. So back then it wasn't completely dismantled like OJ's was. But yes, the VW that we have, again, we're dealing with a car that there was a couple of different VW cars, one that he stole in Florida, where he ultimately was arrested, and that's where he was in prison, and that's where he, you know, received the death penalty. The VW car that he had there, he stole. The VW car that he had out west, where he was originally from, he owned. So he actually had the title to the VW that we have.
Right. So who did you buy it from then?
So we actually maintain confidentiality with that, just at the request of people that we work with. various people. We work with different branches of law enforcement, as I said before, victims, families, sometimes families of the, you know, the criminal, and then some collectors, some private collectors we work with as well. So most of the time people want to remain anonymous, but in this particular case, we worked with a collector that owns it.
Okay. Whitey Bulger is also, and people in this country would be familiar with him. What have you got that belonged to Whitey Bulger?
We have a pair of his tennis shoes. Because he was in hiding for so long, I assume he was like sealing his windows and completely just trying to live in isolation. So he used those solar curtains that almost look like tinfoil. So we have some that, we have a calendar of his that he was, you know, one of those giant desk calendars that you just make notes on what you're doing day to day. So we have that with some of his handwritten notes.
Right. Now, Whitey Bulger's still alive. So Whitey Bulger, you know, if Whitey Bulger was let out of prison when he's 940 years old, he couldn't sue you to get his stuff back, could he?
Oh, no. They can't anyway to do that. I mean, if we have it, it's from a legitimate way that we have it. I mean, it's not something that was stolen from someone, but that particular thing. So a lot of times the government takes possession and then they will sell it and then return the funds to either the government for all the funds that they used for the investigative process, or sometimes, like in the case of the Unabomber, those funds that they did from when they sold items were used towards victims. So they use those funds in different ways. But those items we actually got directly from a government auction.
Janine, thanks very much for talking with us today. That's Janine Vaccarello of the Alcatraz East Crime Museum.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? GasNetworks.ie/movetogas.